Hey there, kids. It's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and I just wanted to take a quick second to tell you about today's sponsor before we go on to tonight's story. Also because the new sponsor actually is a really important thing to me. So we're just coming out of May, which is the end of Mental Health Awareness Month, but of course I want you guys to realize that mental health issues don't just end in May. It's actually a very large problem today, and being able to seek help or feeling lost and not knowing where to go to for help is also a really big problem. So one of the new channel sponsors, and I'm really glad to have them, is BetterHelp. BetterHelp is the world's largest e-counseling platform and is able to offer accessible, affordable, and convenient counseling for struggles with any of life's challenges. So if you've had any problems feeling sad, anxious, angry, and you want to be able to change that, BetterHelp can be able to offer you a helping hand. To try it and sign up, use the link in the description down below. Thanks, BetterHelp, for the sponsorship. And okay, guys, let's get on to tonight's story. Entry 10. Some interesting developments have just occurred. Whether they're good or not is left to be decided. I guess my adrenaline was spiked the fuck up because I decided to jump out of that dumpster, gun raised, and as soon as I did, both cops rushed me. They saw that I was armed for sure, but I guess they didn't care. I shot the guy without the tattoo before being taken down by the other one. I took a couple of baton blows to the ribs before he was restrained by Christian. He groaned, shouted at me in short guttural bursts. Kill me, you fuck! I don't care! I told him to calm the hell down. And then, I laid it all out on him. I told him where we came from. That we were from Earth. His expression seemed to change drastically after that. He was listening intently. What happened to you? How? How did you get here? Christian eventually asked. As it turned out, he was a German-American named Kunz Steiner. He used to be part of the 82nd Airborne Division of the U.S. Army. One day, on a mission to Iraq, some strange shit happened. The same shit that happened to us. It was a cloudy day, he explained. One second, we were up in the air. You know the rest. And only five of us actually made it into the island. I was the only one who made it into this fucking place. Apparently, he killed all the guards who were outside the walls at the time. I was running on fumes, he said. I didn't even know what the hell I was doing. I guess my primal instincts just kicked in. He'd also realized that bullets didn't do a whole lot against the jungle creatures. So he still had plenty of ammunition at that point. When the backup came, they wanted to just get rid of him. At first. But then they realized that he could be used as a valuable asset. They just lost like 10 fucking guards, he recalled. I guess they thought taking me in and turning me into one of them wasn't so bad of an idea. So that's what they did. Been here ever since. I can't tell you how many times I've thought about offing myself, he continued. Nobody should live in a place like this. The voice started quivering, but I always knew something could happen. Now you guys are here. I was a bit taken aback by this. I mean, what the hell was he expecting us to do? I asked him about it. Well, surely one of you knows how to pilot, right? Unfortunately, I don't. I thought about it. Travis was still back at the settlement. I asked him how the hell that was going to help. He looked around for a bit. And that's when we all heard the distant sounds of boot stomping on concrete heading our way. Look, come back to my place first. I'll tell you about it there. That's where we went. And that's where I am right now. You'd think someone as important as law enforcement here would get better living conditions. This place was beyond a shithole. It's on the fifth floor of some dilapidated building that feels like it's going down any second. Apparently, Kunz only gets an hour of running water a day. There's no air conditioning. 90% of his meals consist of these stiff brown energy bars. He gave us some. I almost puked when I saw something blinking back at me after I'd taken a bite. But this was his plan. He'd sneak us out of this place, and we'd go back to the settlement. Kunz knew how to get there, in order to pick up Travis, who would steer. And apparently the controls were similar enough to that of Earth's. After that, we'd go back to Paradise X, break into one of the hangars where they store the aircrafts, and fly out of there in search of the fog again. In search of the way back. Obviously, there was about a billion things that could go wrong with this. First of all, there were apparently only 4 small planes in that entire hangar, and it was heavily guarded. But he had a solution to that. He knew about 15 other guards who also wanted out of this place. That should be enough to break into the hangar, Kuntz stated. Over the years, he had told them about what Earth was like, and it fascinated them. Why they didn't just disregard him as crazy was simple. They were desperate for something else. Anywhere else. Everybody thought about doing it before, but nobody knew how to fly. This would be a golden opportunity for them. I thought about the guards that we had encountered earlier. None of them did seem to care whether they died or not. But there was also Travis. There was no way in hell that he would come with us. He actually seemed to like it here, and as crazy as it is, I can't see him willingly going back. And then there was the biggest problem. What if there was no fog to be found? Were we just going to drift around the sky until our fuel ran out? I ran this by Kuntz. He sighed. Honestly, anywhere is better than here. If we have to land somewhere else, then so be it. I'm not staying in whatever the fuck this place is anymore. His tone was dead serious, expressionless, and unwavering. He was 100% committed to this. I told him that we'd do it. Christian and Lauren didn't have any objections. I guess I'd also had my fill of this island. However, I really don't think we're going to find the fog again. Deep down, I know Kuntz doesn't either. This is just a coping mechanism for him. This is all he's got. It's currently morning, but we're going to leave at night. Easier to sneak out that way. I have to say, I'm still excited. I know I shouldn't be, but I am. We aren't going back to Earth. There's no way. Entry 11. It's finally dark out. We're going for it. Kuntz says that there's a hidden tunnel that we can take that'll lead us out. There's also a vehicle waiting for us, which one of the other guards has set up. Entry 12. We're driving back to the settlement now. Fortunately for us, this vehicle has blinds on the passenger windows. I decided this would be a good time to ask Kuntz some more questions about Paradise X. As it turns out, this place is sort of a combination between a dictatorship and anarchy. There is, technically, somebody who runs and has power over everything. We call him the Pioneer. It's ironic because he had absolutely no contribution in discovering the place. Now, this guy, he can make any laws he wants, but he doesn't. He just leaves the cesspool of a city to fester in its own waste. That's right. There were no actual rules against murder, or anything for that matter. The only real laws were that you couldn't attack the law enforcement, which was broken on an hourly basis, and that you couldn't step foot on the Pioneer's personal property, where he and the other ones close to him lived in relative luxury. This was a big deal. The punishment was supposedly worse than death, and the only reason he sent out police at all were to monitor for any creatures that leaked past the walls. This wasn't common, apparently. If they saw anything, the regular police would notify what was known as the common operatives to come and get rid of them, which was mainly comprised of enhanced guards. After that, I asked about the copies. I could see him becoming visibly paler at the mention of them. He didn't know too much about them either. He'd never seen one. In fact, nobody around him had come to a consensus on what they really were. "Just don't touch them," he said. Simple as that. I asked him what would happen if I did. Maybe he'd have a better answer than Grillo. "Well, you know how they can take your form just by looking at you," he responded. "The thing is, when it's just staring at you, it's merely a hollow shell of yourself. Once you make contact with it, you're essentially giving it permission to become you. And you know, two of the same person can't exist at once. So after that, you're gone." I still didn't understand what the hell that was supposed to mean. I pressed him for more answers, but he left it at that. Nobody seemed to want to talk about those things. Entry 13. The rest of the drive was uneventful. But then we reached the settlement. It's really hard to say what happened. but a massacre obviously occurred. Your abnormally large claw marks scraped into the sides of the cabins. Bodies were haphazardly scattered everywhere. I tried not to look because there were kids. We searched the rest of the place for a while. We found no survivors. And eventually, Christian went back to praying, and Lauren just started bawling. I was horrifically transfixed by the whole scene. I don't know what to think anymore. Eventually, we found Travis's upper body. Safe to say, the plan wasn't going to work. Kuntz cursed loudly and started pacing, and I heard him mumbling, "This can't happen. I have to do this. Fuck, I can't stay here." At that point, I echoed his sentiments pretty closely. We really needed to get the hell off this island, but I never found any trace of Rust. His body wasn't among the dead. I did find his journal. Or what was left of it, anyway. Most pages were torn apart and the rest was simply indecipherable. I tried analyzing it, but it just read like ramblings from a madman. However, I did find something interesting during the last few entries. He scribbled, "This is a terrifying discovery. We..." before the page was ripped off. "Wonder what the hell that's about." "Let's go!" Kuntz's voice echoed across the destroyed civilization, and I asked him what the plan was. "I'll pilot myself if I have to. I don't give a fuck. We're getting out of here." Entry 14. We're driving back to Paradise X now. Christian and Lauren just looked disaffected now, empty. Kuntz said the plan was still on. "Can't be that hard, right?" he said, in regards to flying. "Yeah, probably not," I responded. He was obviously delusional at that point, but he seemed unstable, and I didn't want to piss him off some more. I really don't know where this is going. Entry 15. It's happening. Kuntz has gone out and notified everybody who wants in. The numbers actually increased to 22 now, including some civilians. I asked him, "How the hell are we supposed to fit?" "We won't," he responded. "Not all of us are going to make it. They're all well aware of that." That's nice to think about. I also asked him what he told them about not having a pilot. He said he didn't say anything. They probably wouldn't have wanted to help if they knew this. "Just say that you're the pilot," he told me. "Don't worry. You don't have to actually do it if you don't want to. I'll figure it out," he said. He said this with such unwavering confidence. It's definitely just a facade. I could tell that he had no hope this was going to work, but fuck it. There's always a chance. Besides, Dusk Blue really isn't worth staying on. "Make sure you use those bullets well," he said. "Every shot needs to count." Entry 16. Fuck me. So this is what happened. We met up with the other 22 in some shitty warehouse. Kuntz introduced me as the pilot, or the savior, as he put it. It was really weird, honestly. They all cheered, and Kuntz gave a mini motivational speech about leaving this place, finding a home worth living. This got them all riled up. However, things were looking bleak from the get-go. Amongst us, we had about 7 total bullets. Apparently, some cops like to smuggle weapons, but not many. We started marching through the streets towards the hangar. A bunch of civilians and other cops stared at us with melancholic curiosity as we did so. The hangar soon appeared in front of us. Problem was, there were a lot more guards than we expected. I saw everybody's collective faces drop, and afterward, we learned that somebody had sold us out in exchange for a week's supply of meat. Yeah, some fucking meat. What Kuntz never told us was that the hangar was directly on the Pioneer's property. The next moments were a relative blur. The renegade cops charged the hangar with blatant disregard for their own lives. My vision was obstructed by red mist and bodies as I stumbled around. There was no way in hell that I was running into a sea of bullets, so I started scrambling out of there. At some point during the madness, I was clotheslined by some behemoth of a man, and I blacked out soon afterward. I woke up after God knows how much time. I can feel turbulence. Guess we're on a plane. My chest hurts like fuck and my legs are shackled to a wall. My weapon's gone, but the journal's still here. Great. I looked around the small space to find about 6 of the other cops and civilians who had been with us. Among them were Koontz and Lauren. I guess Chris... Miss Christian... didn't make it. I called over to Koontz and asked him where the hell we're going. As it turns out, we're headed towards a prison, located on an island called Ghost Hazard. He said it so solemnly. Everyone around here looks so defeated. I'm so tired. Entry 17. I don't know what the hell Koontz is trying to do right now. He seems to be trying to unshackle himself. I asked him what his plan was supposed to be, given the fact that we are probably over an ocean right now. He just stared at me with demented eyes. Fuck if I know. Yeah, I get locked up here, though, he sputtered. I've heard the stories. Makes Paradise X sound like an actual paradise. Admittedly, those words disturbed me. I haven't really thought about where we were going. If civilization was so bad, I couldn't fathom what the prisons were like. Entry 18. Fuck me, somebody just came in. He's tossing everyone parachutes. What the hell is happening? Entry 19. The ship, it just keeps escalating. After the guard tossed us the parachutes, he opened up the plane doors. A gust of wind hit me in the face as I stared out into the black sky. Koontz asked him what the hell was going on. Low on fuel, the guard gave us a twisted smirk. Can't drop you off, you have to make your own way there. As he started unshackling everybody, two other guards soon materialized. Rifles trained on us. One of the prisoners tried attacking the guard upon being freed, but he was shot quickly. He was barely acknowledged beyond that. You jump out in the next 30 seconds, you should hit land, the guard said. And I know what you're thinking. You could escape, huh? Well, there's nobody stopping you. But it's a small island, and you don't want to find out what's on it. You got a better shot at surviving in the rift. Slightly, though. I later learned that the rift was the unofficial name for the prison. The guard shot me one last smug grin before walking up and unceremoniously pushing me out. I'd gotten my parachute on just in time. He didn't give me much warning, and as I looked up, I saw the other prisoners coming down one by one. As we descended, I tried to scope out the island, trying to form some expectations. He didn't lie. It was small. About the size of a large shopping mall. There was only one compact concrete structure in the entire landmass. That couldn't be the prison, right? I thought to myself. There wasn't much time for that. I was coming down fast. I made a judgment and opened the parachute. I eventually landed in the shallow water near the shore. I tried taking a second to compose myself, but that's when I heard splashing behind me. I turned around expecting another prisoner. Nope. Instead, I was met with a mass of large, dark tentacles that pierced the water's surface, scrambling towards me, and as I scrambled onto the shore, one of the appendages slammed down just a few inches from me, cracking the land. I made a beeline for the brooding forest in front of me. I estimated that I was about a 10-minute walk from the prison. I seriously considered just not going, but then I remembered. I really thought about it. There was nowhere to fucking go. I jumped at every little sound as I made my way around the dense black woods. At one point, I thought I could hear a baby crying. As I kept listening, the louder it got, the more guttural and demonic it got. I got the hell away from that. Later, I put my hands on a tree while trying to catch my breath. That's when I felt it move. I pulled away just in time to see what I thought was about a hole materializing, sharp, jagged teeth. About a second later, I looked behind me to see an abnormally large humanoid thing crawling towards me, its three heads moving in a disturbingly erratic manner. Again, I bolted the fuck out of there. Maybe about a minute later, I crashed into somebody. I freaked out at first, because I knew what the fuck it was, but then I heard Lauren's voice. She was hysterical. What the fuck is this place? She spoke softly but frantically. Unfortunately, there was no time to talk. I could still hear that thing crawling towards us. I just pulled her up and told her to run, and after a while, we stumbled into a clearing where we started getting shot at. Stop! Boomed a voice. I looked up to see people wearing some kind of uniform staring at us in front of a building. There it was. A tall, threatening-looking man, wearing what looked like a suit of armor, started thundering towards us, and I braced myself for the worst, but he just moved past. I looked back to see him sprint up to the creature and start strangling. A fucking horrific sight it was. During the struggle, he called out to the guards, "Prisoners, take them in! You saw the plane, lazy bastards!" We were soon ushered into the dull structure. Looked like a shitty reception lobby. There were a few chairs, tables set up under flickering bulbs, more guards lined the perimeter of the place, with about one in five being armored. At the front, there was a small desk manned by some dude with one eye and no eye patch. He sighed and started typing. What surprised me was how advanced the monitor looked, given everything that's happened thus far. I wasn't expecting that. While he did this, the guard searched us for weapons. One of them inspected my journal for a bit, but eventually gave it back to me. They didn't even give us uniforms or anything, and after a while, the man behind the desk grunted and signaled towards an elevator to the side. There were about four in total. The guards pushed us in. There were too many buttons to count. They just pushed one near the top. The doors creaked shut and we began to descend. After what felt like 10 minutes, the doors opened back up and we were blasted by a cacophony of harsh sounds. Before this, I never really thought about what hell would be like. But this prison was probably a good enough representation. The architecture was pretty similar to that of Alcatraz, if you'd ever seen the interior. There were numerous rows of cells stretching upward, and then I looked down at what appeared to be a black, endless fissure. It seemed like the deeper it got, the less lights were present. The more horrific screams came from the cell walls below us that were nearly submerged into the darkness. The guards led us down into the racketous corridor. I could see how scared Lauren was. There really wasn't anything I could do to comfort her. I took a look into the cells that I passed by. Most of their other prisoners looked human. Some I couldn't really tell. At one point I saw Kuntz being escorted from the opposite corridor. He made eye contact for a second. His demeanor was a mixture of pissed off and terrified. The guards eventually pushed us into a small room and closed the bars behind us. So I took a look around. There were two bunk beds, but the sheets looked dirty as hell and were stained crimson. So were the concrete floors. To be honest, I didn't expect much better. I have to say, I did breathe a sigh of relief when I saw a toilet and a small sink. There were two other people in there, both men. I guess gender separation wasn't really a thing here, but to be fair, I don't really see how they could accomplish that in a place like this. One of the guys suddenly sat up in the bed. I didn't know what to expect from the people here, so I was ready to take action if he tried to touch Lauren, but he smiled at us. A big, toothy yellow grin. "Hey there, name's Buck Lane." He had a comically stereotypical Australian accent, but he did sound friendly. Well, he walked towards us, arms outstretched. We both shook his hand, somewhat hesitantly. I questioned how somebody could be in a place like this and still have any semblance of cheerfulness. I asked him that. He gave off a dry chuckle. "Well, it's better not to think about it, yeah? Won't do you any good. That's how people go crazy. They think about things too much. I mean, really, what the hell is consciousness even?" He laughed again. Then his expression went a bit more serious. "But I'm already there." I don't really know how to respond to that, so I just nodded. I noticed that the other guy hadn't even acknowledged us. I guess Buck noticed me staring. As he chimed in, "I don't worry about him. He's harmless. Gone far off the deep end, though. Look at the shit he writes on the walls." I brought my gaze over to the wall near his bed. Sure enough, it was covered in writing. I saw a few lines, like, "Corruption engaged. There is no future," before looking away. He did have a mound of pencils lying near his bed, though. Mine was taken away earlier. I asked him if I could take one, but was met with no response. I took it as a yes. We talked to Buck some more, as it turns out, he was also from Earth, but he didn't seem so surprised when we told him that we were as well. "More common than you might think," he started. "People go missing in planes all the time. Where do you think they end up? Here. That's where this place is." Hearing that gave me chills. For some regular commercial airline passenger going on vacation only to end up here. That must be terrifying. Apparently, Buck was the sole survivor of a crashed plane headed to Amsterdam. "Weed and hookers, mate," he said. "That's where I thought I was headed." His plane crash-landed on what seemed to be a stone desert. He walked for days eating peanuts before he finally stumbled upon a civilization. "Those were some strange fuckers," he went on. "Looked like weird rock people. Can't even describe it." He ended up flipping shit at the sight of them and ran away. Apparently, they took this as a threat of some kind, captured him, and put him in a small cage. He stayed there for days, eating strange bugs they served him before being loaded into a plane and transported here. "If I went to jail on Earth, they'd usually be a reason. Not here, mate." After that, he told us some more about the prison. From what he'd gathered, he was pretty much a global clusterfuck of an institution. Individuals were brought here from everywhere. The place was also absolutely massive. Ghost Hazard wasn't the only entrance. There were others as well. Also, the more dangerous a prisoner is considered, the closer their cell was to the bottom. This was fucking insane. For food, twice a day, guards would bring around what Buck referred to as nutrition blocks. I'm staring at one right now. It looks terrifyingly similar to the energy bars Kuntz was eating in Paradise X. Safe to say, I have no appetite. Another similarity to Paradise X stemmed from the fact that this place was also essentially lawless. As long as you didn't attack the guards, steal food or resources, try to escape or cause a general large-scale uprising, you had free rein. Nobody had any obligation to step into conflicts that didn't directly affect them. However, this is the part that really fucking sucks. A good portion of the day was spent on manual labor. It was a lot of general maintenance work, but most of it was supposed to be spent down in the hole, a large cave system that had been dug through and evacuated by prisoners for years. Nobody really knew what the point of it was. A lot of people just assumed that it was for discipline, but there was other theories. "We're digging for something. No doubt about it," Buck exclaimed. One theory was that the warden, the individual who ran this place, was obsessed with finding something called Neo Grail. Supposedly something during the timeline's history, the original Holy Grail was corrupted by a powerful demonic entity during some kind of Armageddon. This is the reason why this world went to shit. However, the warden believed that this wasn't the end of it. He'd studied various ancient books and scriptures. He'd come to the conclusion that there was another grail hidden somewhere in the vicinity of the prison. That's why he went about building this place. When the Neo Grail was finally uncovered by a holy man like himself, the world would revert back to peace. But this was only one theory. Some think that the warden has a more sinister aspiration, that he's actually trying to start Armageddon himself. Speaking of the warden, his history is shrouded in enigmas. Nobody really knows where the hell he came from. He has a large office on the surface of one of the island entrances, but rarely comes down to the actual prison. There were also a few alleged descriptions of his appearance, however. Not so long ago, there was a large insurgence around the lower levels. People were going insane down there, and eventually a large enough group had formed to the extent where they decided that there was a tangible enough threat to the guards. They started rioting, working up the levels, trying to get to the surface, and eventually, it was deemed enough of an emergency that the warden needed to be called. This was a big deal. As the story goes, he came down to the lower floors himself, completely unarmed, and he took out the insurgency single-handedly. According to the people that saw him, he was extremely tall, maybe around 8'5". He wore a large trench coat with religious symbols stitched all over it. And then there was his eyes. Now this was contested, but they were also allegedly pitch black. Lifeless. Along with that, he looked young in appearance. Despite the fact that he'd been around for a long fucking time. Also, nobody knew where the source of his strength came from. He could pick up a 200-pound man with one arm and throw him aside with ease. Upon being stabbed, the metal of the blade would just break off in his skin. Some people thought he was a devil incarnate. After that, the theory about him being somebody trying to return peace to the world became a lot less popular. Especially after what happened next. What lurked at the absolute bottom of the prison was a mystery. Well, with there being no lights down there and all. However, the survivors of the uprising were given a chance to know. Instead of them all being executed, they were given a different punishment. They were lowered, by rope, into the dark crevice. They screamed like hell, and most of them tried committing suicide. They stayed down there for about a minute before being brought back up. Buck witnessed this firsthand. He said that he could hear indescribable animalistic sounds emanating from below. It was a horrific sight when they were brought back up. They were deformed, but not in the traditional sense. Some of them had strange-looking limbs growing out of their legs. Some had sprouted eyes on their arms. Some had no semblance of human features at all.
"I had tried to escape," Buck told us.
"You could probably see why that's not happening." For the first time, his teary expression dropped. It was as if he just reminded himself of how bad the situation really was. "But I had to know one thing." "How long are we here for?" I asked him. I was scared as hell of the response. None of the guards had even said a word to us about this. Buck just sighed. "Never seen anyone leave, mate. Couldn't tell you. But don't worry about it. She'll be right." There was no confidence in his voice. I know he doesn't believe that. I can hear guards opening up cell doors next to us. Buck said that it's time to go into the hole. The workday was starting. But here's the thing. There's no way in hell I'm staying in this place. I'll find a way out. If it kills me.